At Cool Air Products, we developed AC Smart Seal Quick Shot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's 3-in-1, with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
What's up, guys? I think your mind might be blown on this podcast if you haven't heard of what we're going to discuss. So we got Tony First, Armstrong Fluid Technology, back on the podcast. I mean, he's probably the leading guest. Great guy to talk to, so knowledgeable. And he's going to talk to us about VFDs and proper grounding. Electronics need to be properly grounded. I've learned this a long time ago. But if you don't properly ground a VFD, Tony's going to talk about a certain term that can happen to a motor and continue to happen. If you don't know what's causing it, if you don't know how to identify it, it'll continue to happen over and over and over again. This is a great topic, guys. Let's get to this. HVAC Know It All Podcast. I'm your host, Gary McCready. This podcast is sponsored by Master, and they carry a great lineup of heat pumps. I've had the opportunity to install both Fujitsu and MoveAir. So if you're in the market for installing new equipment that you haven't tried, MoveAir, Fujitsu, check them out. Check out master.ca. This podcast is sponsored by Cintas. With the warm weather coming, you might want to look at uniforms for your team. That is for the spring/summer. T-shirts and lighter sweaters, jackets, stuff like that. Because the mornings are cool and sometimes the afternoons are too, but the day is warm. So sometimes it's one of those layer things, right? So check out cintas.com/HVAC know-it-all to check out some uniform options for your team.
Welcome to the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. Recorded from a basement somewhere in Toronto, Canada. Your host and HVAC tech, Gary McCready, will take you on a deep dive into the industry, discussing all things HVAC. From storytelling to technical discussion. Enjoy the show.
Yes, I'd say I'm like a bad penny, but I don't think that's really a good analogy at this point.
They don't make pen. Do they make pennies in the U.S. still?
Yeah, we still have pennies, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, they took pennies out of circulation for us. Oh, man. I'd want to guess about 4 or 5 years ago. Apparently, it costs more than a penny to make a penny.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why we keep making them, but we do. So they are what they are.
Anyway, VFDs is the topic, and you want to discuss VFDs. So, I don't work on VFDs very often, so this is all you, man. You're gonna have to run the show tonight.
No, that's okay. At the end of the day, you know, VFDs have kind of become mainstream within the HVAC industry. And we see them on everything. I mean, they're on fans, they're on pumps, they're on compressors. You know, they've become kind of commonplace. And one of the problems that we keep running into with VFDs is that people don't know how to install them. And install them correctly. They want to treat them like a motor starter. And while, yeah, they are a motor starter, they turn the motor on and off, but there's different rules for VFDs. And so what you have to look at is when you look at a VFD, all the things we look at electrically on a motor starter, you know, conventional across the line motor starter, you know, we're not as concerned about the type of wire that's used. We follow the National Electrical Code, or in your case with Canada, I forget what your electrical code is actually called. It's not called the National Electrical Code. I forget what it is. But at the end of the day, the problem with it is it's really, you know, the electrical code is all driven around operator safety and user safety. It's not driven around protecting the equipment per se and minimizing electrical noise. And so one of the problems with drives is, you know, a variable frequency drive takes AC power, turns it into DC power, and then converts it back into AC power. Okay, so that's the real simple of what a drive does. The problem is in that process, it creates electrical noise. And that electrical noise gets rejected back into the electrical system. But it does it because it dumps it to ground. And the other thing that happens, because of the fact that we have a non-sinusoidal waveform on the output side of the drive, we end up with this weird power that creates, so you understand how an electric motor works, right? We induce a voltage and a current into the rotor, and that's what causes the motor to rotate, right?
That's what spins the rotor inside the stator.
Right. Yeah. So when we create this funky waveform and we're inducing it into the rotor tends to emit weird currents, and they try to discharge through the rotor shaft. And so you can do things like put shaft grounding rings on, and which is basically a brush that goes around the shaft and help carry that charge to ground. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, what really drives this and what really makes it better and solves the problem is proper grounding. And so one of the things that nobody, I don't know what it is. People don't read the installation manual for stuff. If I look at the national, if I look at the electrical code says the ground wire is allowed to be one size smaller than the current carrying conductors. So if I have number six conductors, I'm allowed to have a number eight. Is that right? Yeah, number eight ground wire.
Okay.
Actually, I think I'm even allowed to have a number 10, depending on the service. The problem is, with a VFD, when you have that undersized ground wire, you don't have a low enough impedance ground to carry all this noise away from your connected piece of equipment and away from the motor and the drive. And so what all the drive manufacturers have, they've got stuff in their installation manual that says that drives are supposed to be grounded with a low impedance ground, and the ground wire should be the same size or even larger than the current carrying conductors.
Yeah, I was going to say larger, because I mean, when you're bonding equipment, they you're using quite a large conductor to do so, right? So.
Right, right. And so, you know, I keep going out on jobs. And one of the problems is when you have these stray rotor currents, you have a phenomenon called EMD, electromachining discharge. And basically what happens is...
Sounds gross.
Yeah, it's kind of nasty because it tears up. It does really bad things to the bearings. So what happens is... You know what an arc welder is.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, you know, and I'm sure you've taken a roller bearing or a ball bearing apart, and you've got an inner and outer race, and you've got balls in between the inner and outer race, right?
Yeah.
Well, what happens is you start to create, as these currents try to get out of the rotor, you know, you have intermittent contact between the ball, you know, between the inner race, the ball, and the outer race. And so what ends up happening is, you understand electrical, that when a contactor pulls in, it's one thing. When it releases, there's usually an arc, okay? Because the arc occurs when the circuit tries to break, right? Yeah. Well, when the ball tries to move away from the race, as that current is passing through it, it arcs. And so it creates what's called fluting, F-L-U-T-I-N-G, fluting, in the bearing, and it looks like a row of dimes inside the outer race. And what it is it's the electrical discharge going from inner race to ball to outer race, and it's creating a flash. You know, it's basically arcing, and it's pitting that outer race. And what happens is your bearings start getting noisy. Now, the motor won't die immediately when this happens. It's not the end of the world. But they do get loud because the bearing is getting excessively worn. It's getting worn prematurely.
This is the first time I've heard of this type of thing. Like I when you say a row of dimes, like you're talking about like black spots, like almost around.
They're not really black spots. They're just little round silver spots.
Really? Okay.
And you'd have to see, and I've got some pictures of them somewhere.
When you said that, I had this kind of flashback of seeing something on a bearing that was something that looked like there was like different, like circles going around it, that it didn't make sense to me.
That's exactly what it is.
And nobody would think, hey, the bearings are bad on that motor. It's because there's electrical arcing going on inside in the bearing. Like I wouldn't have, you know what I mean? That's not something you just put two and two together and say, well, that makes a lot of sense. So that's interesting.
Yeah. So the thing is, grounding will help fix that problem. The other thing adequate, you know, the having this low impedance ground.
So grounding at the VFD?
Yeah. So what you have to have is you have to have a ground from the motor to the VFD.
To the VFD,
and
okay.
From the VFD back to wherever the power source is. And what a lot of things, what happens a lot of times is way back when, back, you know, 30, 40 years ago, we were allowed to use what's known as a case ground. And a case ground was, you were allowed to use the conduit as the grounding means. You didn't have to have a separate ground. You didn't have to have a grounding conductor. The conduit was your grounding conductor. Well, that was kind of sort of okay.
Supplyhouse.com, it's such a fabulous idea this day and age, because if you need something, you can pop onto their website, you can order it directly from their site to your job site or home or wherever to the shop, and you don't have to go drive and get it. Especially if it's not an emergency, if it's like ahead of time, we're looking into the future. So if you guys are looking to get some stuff online for the trades, tools, some parts, accessories, check out supplyhouse.com.
But if you think about EMT conduit, what kind of connectors do you have on the end of EMT at box? You got a set screw connector, right?
Usually,
how much surface area do you have when you tighten that set screw down? How much surface contact area do you have? And if you think about steel versus copper, which is a better conductor, steel or copper?
Well,
you know, copper's a much better conductor.
Yeah, well, that's why it uses wiring, right?
Yeah. And so conduit is a terrible grounding medium. Now, it was okay when, you know, all we were worried about is a safety ground. It was okay. But the problem is, if you go into a retrofit application, so we have an existing building, and let's say they have underground conduit. The conduit's buried in the slab. And you put a drive in, and there's no ground conductor pulled in. And you connect the wires up to the drive, and you connect the drive up to the motor, and you're going to rely on the conduit as the ground because it was legal at the time it was put in. And there's nothing in the code that makes you upgrade the electrical system to properly ground, you know, to ground everything to current day code. Well, what condition do you think that conduit is underground? It's steel conduit. It's in the ground. ground is wet.
That's not going to be doing well.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot, usually not a whole lot left of it. I was just on a job here, I don't know, a month ago, month and a half ago up in Chicago. And that's the way that everything in the building was grounded. The building was, you know, 50 years old and everything was case grounded. And so we actually started measuring the impedance of the conduit. We had open circuits on conduit. There was no grounding there at all. And they were absolutely traction bearings. They could not get more than 6 months out of a set of bearings in a motor.
That is super interesting to me because, I mean, if you never said this to me, I walked into a building, heard bad bearings in a motor, changed it, and 6 months later, the bearings are bad again, I would not think of checking the ground source or checking to see how good the ground is on the circuit. I would never have thought that.
Right.
That is super interesting.
So one of the things, you know, so how do you check the impedance of the conduit, right? So this is the really cool thing. If you look in the electrical code, there's a chart for every size wire out there of how many ohms per foot impedance the wire is. And so at one point in time, I used to have a 500 foot spool of number 16 wire. And I forget what the resistance of it was. But I knew that think about it. Your meter's got, 3 foot test leads on it?
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to get all the way across the mechanical room with 3 foot test leads.
Exactly.
So I had this reel of wire made up with alligator clips on the end of it. And I'd hook the reel up at one, stretch the wire out and hook it up at one end of the conduit. And the other alligator clip was over there where I was at the meter at the other end of the conduit. And I could measure the impedance of the circuit. And then all I had to do was subtract the amount of impedance of what my reel of wire was worth. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I would probably have to listen to you say that again.
Okay. So
just to fully understand.
So every gauge of wire has a different impedance per foot.
Yeah. I 100%. Okay. I get
so
that.
So yep. I had a 500 foot spool.
Okay.
That had, it was number 16 wire, just THHN, nothing spectacular. Had alligator clips on each end of the spool, on each end of the bare wire at the spool. Yes. And so what I would do is, and I made it just for doing silly things like this, I'd stretch out the spool of wire in the mechanical room or wherever I was going to measure the grounding of the impedance of the ground for the conduit. And I'd clip it onto the conduit at each end, at one end. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have carry the spool over to where my meter was at. So I had, essentially a 500 foot long meter lead.
Yes.
And all I had to do to, measure the resistance of the conduit and then back out the resistance of the wire. Cause I knew I had 500 foot of extra lead length in there that I knew what that resistance was. So I could back it out of the equation.
I see what you're saying. So you're just using the roll as a reference to how far it's
right,
how far you're measuring and then referencing the chart with it. Okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right. Because, nobody makes meter leads that are 500 feet long or 250 feet long, anything like that. Yeah. So it's one of those things that, it's the little things that, nobody teaches you in school.
So let's not ground a conduit. Let's find a way to ground all the way back to the earth ground and the panel and just
exactly
daisy chaining off of that type.
Right. And the one thing you got to be careful of, and this is one of the things that I see electricians, and I don't mean to beat up on the electricians. I've seen service guys do the same thing. So they got three drives on a wall and they all the drive wires go into a trough, and that trough goes up and into a 12x12 pull box. And they bring all the grounds up in there, and they tie all the grounds together to a single ground that goes back to the panel board. The problem is what they just did is they created a ground loop between each drive. So, or what's also known as a circular ground. So if you think about it, drive number one, the impedance pathway or the resistance in the ground pathway is lower from drive one to drive two than it is from drive one all the way back to the panel board.
Yep.
And so it creates this ugly little ground loop. And so if there's a problem in drive one, it's discharging into drive number two.
Interesting.
And or into drive number three, depending on whether drive one and two are both running. But you've created this ugly little ground loop right there at the equipment. And so each drive has to have its own independent ground wire all the way back. And I don't know, I don't know what it is with the with our industry as a whole, but it seems
everyone's a know-it-all. That's what's wrong with our industry. Well, that's what's wrong with humankind. Everyone's a know-it-all.
Well, I think the problem is, and here's the problem, is we as an industry teach people how to service stuff, but we really don't teach people how to troubleshoot anymore. You know, equipment has done us a major disservice. I mean, think about all the rooftops that are out there, all the mini splits that are out there, you know, all the different equipment that's out there, all the gas furnaces.
Yeah, they all have
a printed circuit board in them, right?
Yeah.
And the printed circuit board's got a little red or green LED on it. And depending on how many times, you know, something goes wrong and the little LED starts to flash, right? And you got a chart in there that says, hey, if it flashes three times fast and two times slow, it means this. And you go, oh, that's a bad pressure switch or that's a bad igniter. And you replace the part and you move on. We've forgotten how to troubleshoot. And we've forgotten how to analyze problems. And so, you know, you and I have had lots and lots of conversations over the past few years about getting back to basics and understanding how equipment really works and understanding how to really analyze what the problem is and not just go, eh, it's a bad bearing in a motor, I'm going to replace the bearing and move on. Something made that bearing go bad. Bearings don't just die on their own. And
100% agree. Yep.
So it's really about understanding and finding out what the root cause is. Because if you don't find out the root cause, guess what? It's going to fail again. And we're not doing any service to our customer by not fixing the root cause of the problem.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Here's what comes into my head right now, because what you're telling me and the ground thing, how it can cause a bearing issue. I've been in this industry now this is my 27th year going in the industry. If I went to a call, like I was saying, and it was a bad bearing, change it. Yeah. Everything seems to be good. I wouldn't have any idea that this ground issue is causing a problem. So what do technicians do that are experiencing bad bearings in this motor that's over the course of a couple of years, just keep swapping it out? How are they going to understand what the root cause is? I guess they would, at that point, you'd have to maybe use a help button, contact someone that is solid with VFDs and bring them out and assess the site. Cause I have no problems doing that at all. Like if I feel that something requires a specialist, because I don't think I'm a specialist at anything. I just kind of get thrown into things and figure it out, come through the end. And sometimes figuring it out is reading a manual, calling tech support, even getting somebody that is familiar with that specific piece of machinery and has tons of experience on that piece of machinery only, out to site. I will use all of those things to come to a solution. I mean, is that sometimes the path we got to take nowadays, because everything's become so like every manufacturer's got their own proprietary way of doing things. Has this become the new norm for when it comes to troubleshooting sometimes, you think?
It's been almost a year since I got the Oxy set from Ambro Controls. Since then, I haven't touched my larger set. I haven't done any big, large-scale installs or anything like that. It's been smaller stuff and service. So it's been fabulous for me. Like, it's just lightweight. Now they got the backpack, and they got the precision torch and stuff like that that you can add to the set. So if you guys want to check it out, I love the thing, and it's easier to carry, grab on the go, especially with the backpack, climbing ladders and stuff like that. So it's the Oxy set from Ambro Controls.
I think that's part of it. I also think the problem is, you know, it's a 25 horsepower or 50 horsepower or 100 horsepower motor. You take the motor out, you take it to a motor shop. The motor shop takes it apart and they go, yeah, okay, the bearings had fluting in them. Well, you know, you put the new bearing, they put the new bearings in, and the guy picks the motor up, and the guy at the counter says, yeah, it had bad bearings in it, and we put new bearings in it, and it's all good. You got to ask what was wrong with the bearings. You know, was it false Brinelling? Was it fluting? There's a whole bunch of different things that cause bearings to go bad.
Well, hopefully the guy that's changing or the bearings in the motor knows all of this stuff, and he's not just right. Somebody that can change bearings and knows how to do it.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I would hope that the motor shop that I'm working with has good enough people that they're going to tell me, hey, look, here's what we saw with the bearings. Here's things you should be looking at. You know, I would hope they would tell me, yes, we noticed fluting in the bearings. That's why the bearings were noisy. Here's the typical causes of fluting. Because the motor guy's not out there on the job site, so he doesn't know what the VFD looks like. He doesn't know what the installation looks like. And at that point, you're standing there at his counter, go, hey, do you have somebody here that's really good on VFDs that can come out with me, meet me on site, and let's look at this together and figure out what the problem is. I would hope that we have, you know, that they would be willing to, you know, ask those kind of questions and have that level of interaction. The downside is not, you know, okay, so
Can I read the definition? I put fluting in. Hold on.
Okay.
And I'll read you the first one. I put fluting meaning, and the first one that came up was sound reminiscent of that of a flute. That was the first
one. Okay.
That was the first one.
You know, I'll buy that.
And then I'm like, okay, maybe I should expand the search. And I wrote bearing fluting meaning. And the first paragraph that comes up says the fast switching time between currents increases the common mode voltage the motor shaft experiences, which is then eventually discharged through the motor bearings. This electrical discharge leads to the grooved and frosted pits found in bearings known as fluting. Interesting.
Yep. So one of the things that, you know, in a lot of bigger HVAC companies, the service guy that's out working on the unit isn't the guy going to the motor shop. You know, he takes the motor and drops it off at his shop. The truck driver in the shop delivers it to the motor shop. And the service guy never gets to talk to the motor repair guy. So the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. And at that point, you know, there's a breakdown there. You know, if you think about it, you know, think about before you opened your own shop, you were working for somebody. And how often did they let you go to the parts house?
I actually was, the way my company worked, the guy doing the job, he was the guy going to the parts house, getting his parts.
But, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that the guys don't go pick up their own parts. I mean, they have
they got a runner that goes and gets everything for them.
Yeah. And so when you have that runner, you don't get the luxury of talking to the guy at the supply house to find out what he knows and what insight he can give you into what the problem might be. And so that's a bit problematic. The other thing is, and I don't mean to be beating up on service guys. I'm not beating up on service guys in any way, shape, or form.
I do it all the time.
Well, I'm not saying I'm not saying the guys are bad. The problem
I know, I'm just kidding.
The problem that we have is that we all get pushed and we're all trying to do 10,000 things at once. And we're trying to, you know, we know, you know, hey man, you know, it's -5 outside and I've got 15 more no heat calls to run today. And it's already noon. Well, you know, we're trying to get them done. We're trying to get people back up and running because, you know, I mean, not having any heat's no fun. Same with not having any cooling. It's miserable. And so service guys inherently want to do the right thing. And they want to, you know, they want to get people back up and running. And so we kind of forget that part of our job is to figure out why it failed in the first place. You know, I mean, we do it with refrigeration compressors, or we should. We want to know why that compressor failed. You and I both know compressors just don't die on their own. They don't die of old age.
Yeah, they usually die of some form of heat or acid or
something. Heat, acid, liquid floodback.
Yeah.
Motor voltage problems, take your pick. I mean, bad contactor, single phasing, but there's something that precipitates that failure.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, what we really want to do is we want to figure out why. Because otherwise, we're just going to go back out and repair it again. And I don't know about you, but I don't like changing compressors out to begin with. Let alone have to do it a second time.
Yeah.
You know, because last time I checked, compressors are heavy.
you don't just throw them on your shoulder and climb the ladder like all the other cool guys do out there?
Gary, I'm 65 years old. No.
I've never done. So there's a tool called it is called it's made by Supco. It's actually what do you call it? Their Trade Fox brand, where it was sort of technician invented and adopted by Supco. And so it's got two handles on it. You can switch the handles around to go opposite ways, or they can be the same way. And it's got this little, it's probably about 3 or 4 feet long. And it's got this little half round circle that cups like the scroll. And then it's got a little rod that sticks up on almost like probably more than a 45, maybe, I don't know, maybe like a 55 degree angle. And that goes inside of that little tab on the top of the scroll. So you can cup it and you can lift it and then pull it out without having to like bend over and break your back. And I was testing it out and I was walking along the roof with my apprentice because we had switched the handles from the same side to opposite sides. So he was holding a side and so was I walking across the roof. And the amount of comments we got from all the guys out there saying, oh, just throw it on your shoulder and get up the ladder. Like stop being a pussy for lack of a better term. This is the comments that we were getting just because we were trying to take the stress off our bodies. And younger guys don't get this. I guess you have to feel the aches and the pains and all that coming in before you realize, hey, maybe I gotta ease up a little bit. But I don't like changing compressors either because they're heavy. Like, who wants to lift a compressor and hurt your back? I'd rather go to the gym and lift weights in a controlled environment, not hauling around compressors.
Well, And the new condensing units, you know, I had new air conditioning put in my house a couple of years ago, and it's a 4-ton condensing unit, but it's a high efficient, ultra high efficiency condensing unit. The damn thing's almost 5 foot tall.
Yeah, they're big. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay, well, the only way to get to the compressor is to take the fan off the top of it and reach down in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so I can reach down in there and cut the tubing loose to disconnect the compressor from the refrigeration circuit. And that's all well and good. And I could use that little thing that you just described to lift the compressor out of there. But before I do that, I got to reach down in there and take the bolts off that hold the compressor feed in. And then at some point in time, I got to stand on my head and braise that compressor back into the circuit.
Oh, I've been there. I've my feet dangling out the top of a condensing unit. Been there.
Yeah.
Done that.
And I'm thinking, you know, that can't be real comfortable doing that.
Nope.
And I'm thinking, why did we do this to ourselves? Why didn't we build the condensing unit in such a way that there was access into the compressor section from, you know, there's an access door on the back of the unit you take off? Did you really have to have that much coil surface that you couldn't figure out another way to do it?
Okay, so since we're on compressors then, Tony, would this phenomenon as fluting, would that happen, because there's tons of variable speed compressors now, would this happen in a variable speed compressor situation, or could it, the same exact scenario if it's not grounded properly?
Exactly. And I mean, think about residential wiring. You have, okay, so let's say it's a 30 amp circuit to the condensing unit. You got two number 10 conductors, and you got a number 12 ground. I can guarantee it. You know, now if it's 40 amp circuit, you've got, you know, two number 8s and a number 10, but it's the ground is one size smaller than the current carrying conductors. And while that's okay, it's not helping carry all that electrical noise and all that garbage away from the compressor, away from the VFD, back to the panel board.
Interesting. So I wonder, I'm going to reach out to a couple of compressor manufacturers about this and see if they have anything to say about it. Cause this is the first time I've heard of fluting, and there's a ton of variable speed compressors out there. And I mean, now that you say this, I'm going to be looking all over the place for this now.
Yeah. Right? And I will tell you that the bigger the motor gets, the worse it gets. Okay. You know, cause it's all about the size of the rotor. Uh-huh. And how much mass is in that rotor. And so, you know, think about a scroll compressor, think about a 5-ton scroll compressor. The rotor in that thing is not that big. I mean, you really get down to, I'm sure you've taken a cut of scroll compressor apart and taken it apart. The rotor's not that big. But that's part of what plays into this. Now, I don't know enough about the compressor world. In the scroll world, I know how big the rotors are in the big variable speed screw compressors and stuff. They're as big as a standard motor rotor. But on the scroll compressors, I don't know how big that rotor is, but rotor size does play into it. The bigger the rotor, the greater the potential.
Okay. So I learned something.
But I'd be curious to see what the scroll guys that you know, what they say.
Yeah, I'm going to start digging on this.
Come to think about it, I'm betting that, you know, they've had, you know, they get compressors that come back that are failed. When they cut them apart, is anybody looking at the bearings?
Well, I know that manufacturers like Copeland and stuff, they'll cut compressors. I know people that cut compressors open, and a lot of times they find some interesting things. And most of the time it's like overheating and stuff like that, and or like a smash valves because of flood back. But this is something new that that you're just telling me about that I'm going to start to ask questions on fluting and if it's been noticed in compressors, variable speed.
Yeah,
compressors.
That would be really interesting. I'd be interested to know that.
Cool. All right. Well, stay tuned, Tony, because I'll fill you in once I know more.
Hey, I appreciate it.
We can talk to some people at CMPX potentially.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
Copeland's there. So they might know a thing or two.
Yeah, that could be really cool.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to the show, by the way. I'm really looking forward to the show and you know, getting to hang out and, you know, maybe, you know, at that evening when we have our little event that, you know, can talk to some people.
Yeah, no, it'll be a very, very cool show. This is the, just quickly before we head out, this is, so last CMPX, it's only every 2 years, and I've always encouraged them, hey, let's bump it up to every year, because we're going to the larger building now in the convention center, where it's always been in the smaller building. Now we're going to the larger building. There is U.S. manufacturers that have never come to the show that are starting to come because their eyes are opening up to the market and the talent and stuff like that that Canada has to offer as far as HVAC, plumbing, electrical, all of that. And the amount of people flying in from all over the country and even the U.S. that are not part of a manufacturer that are just coming to the show to check it out and hang out. This is the first time in a long time that's happened as far as I know. So, I mean, these shows are great. And I think everything is changing. In the past, they were very stuffy, very corporate. Times are changing. I mean, it's not the manufacturers now that are completely controlling the narrative. It's the actual technicians and the skilled trade workers now that are all basically starting their own brand on places like TikTok and Instagram. They've all got voices and people are listening to them now, and things are changing because of it. And it's really, really fun to watch it unfold in real time.
So is this show geared more towards the technician or more towards the engineer?
Probably the technician. The technician. I mean, there'll be a lot of engineering type folks there that, and there are engineers that come, they're HVAC designers and stuff like that. There are those people there, but most of the people you'll see walking around are technicians still in their work clothes from the work day, or they've snuck in for a few hours and left type thing. But a lot of them come down in buses. That they'll get the whole crew together at the company in the morning. They'll shut the company down for the day, perhaps bring a busload of people out and busload back type thing. So it's I would say, yeah, for sure, technician based.
Cool. No, that's good. The reality is, and you and I've talked about this in other times that we've done recordings, is we've talked about the need for training, the need for education.
So much.
And it's getting people to, you know, and I love to hear the stories of, you know, like you just said, of the contractor shutting their doors for the day and rounding their entire crew up and bringing their entire crew in to learn for the day and talk to all the different manufacturers. Because at the end of the day, you learn so much more having that interaction with the manufacturer. And, you know, I see a lot of the stuff you do. I of course, you and I follow each other on LinkedIn. And I see a lot of the reviews you do on different products and stuff. And I think that's awesome. I think that is just as cool can be. Because at the end of the day, other technicians want to know, does it really work? Does it not work? Or is the camera guy giving me a line? You know?
Yeah, no. And the other thing that you're going to learn from people that are at these types of venues and shows. But the other thing is you're going to do, and could be more important, is create is create a network of these people, like put them in your back pocket, take their cards, put their numbers in your phone, because one day you're going to come across something and you'll be like, oh, remember that guy from the show from such and such company? He was super smart. Maybe I'll get a hold of him because he might know or might be able to lead me in the right direction. So it's all about building networks. It's all about building help buttons, because as I said off the top, it's hard for people these days to walk into something they've never seen, never touched, and not have questions, right? And not have questions about it, and just fully understand the operation of the machine before they attempt to troubleshoot, before they finish troubleshooting, or during troubleshooting. So it's all about learning and creating those networks as well, and maintaining those relationships.
Yep.
Cool. All right, Tony, I'm looking forward to meeting you in person in a couple of weeks. Guys, if you're going to be down at CMPX, Tony will be there maybe Thursday for a few hours at the Armstrong booth, potentially.
Yep, I know I'll be there Wednesday for a little while. I think I will be at the show about 2 o'clock Wednesday afternoon.
Cool.
And I'm going to try to walk around a little bit, because when I did AHR in Chicago this year, I didn't get to walk around. I was in our booth the entire time. I could never get away.
Yeah, walk around. You'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I want to kind of take it all in. You know, I've been been away from the service side of our industry for a few years now, and so I kind of want to walk around a little bit and see what's new and different. See what exciting stuff is coming. That isn't a pump.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, Tony, right. Looking forward to meeting you, and you have a great night, my man.
All right, Gary, thank you much, sir. You have a wonderful evening. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Follow HVAC Know-It-All on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere else Gary feels like popping up. This has been a Two Smokes and a Coffee production.